Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, look at this. Sunny morning again. In Alabama, on the Gulf Coast, we're going to have a good time talking about this day, talking about your garden, talking about your life here in Alabama and on the Gulf Coast. Listen, so here's what I've been doing this past week. We've been doing a lot of research on forests, a lot of research on rivers and streams, getting things ready to really take what we know about how these things work, just sort of take it up a level. And one of the things we're looking at really closely is this thing called soil. You know, that's the stuff underneath your feet, and that's what grows plants. And plants, of course, are the structure of the world. Plants have structured the world. Plants are your rooms. plants are the house inside which the world lives and grows and thrives. And so, but almost all plants, virtually all plants that are useful to you, will need soil. And we've been thinking about how does this soil, what's in that soil? how does it work for you? And it's a really interesting question because it makes a big difference. And, you know, people call me and they say, what's wrong with my lawn? And I say, it's the soil. And because there are things going on, it's not the grass. It's not what's happening on the grass. It's not some fungicide you apply to the grass. It's not some herbicide. It's not the sand spurs that you're getting in your feet aren't because of the grass or something you need to spray on top. It's because of what's happening in the soil in many cases. In most cases, it's the reason why your centipede's doing so poorly. It's the reason why your gardens are failing. It's the reasons why your shrubs are dying. It's not something happening above ground. It's what's happening in the ground. And we try to talk about this all the time. So I'm having a fun time thinking about soil this past week. And we've been talking a lot about mowing. And mowing, believe it or not, affects what's in your soil. And it affects it in a big way, and it affects it in ways you may not be thinking about. And how you mow is affecting what's in your soil, and consequently, how you mow is affecting what your grass looks like, not just because of what's happening above ground, but because of what's happening underground. And we've got a little bit more data to support all this. It's a very interesting thing. If you have a pasture, and there's been some good research on this, and you're going in and you decide, I want this pasture to look neat. I want my pasture to look like a golf course. And next door, you got somebody who's got a pasture, and they say, I want my pasture to look like a pasture. I want it to look like the old grasslands. I want there to be a variety of plants at different heights. And I'm not going to go in. I'm not a recreational mower, as we like to call it. Somebody who hadn't got anything to do with their time except get on the mower and go mow things. I'm not one of those people. I'm somebody who wants a good productive grassland for my cows, for my birds, for my horses, whatever. And you take those two concepts and you put them side by side. The guy over here who says, I love mowing. I don't have anything better to do with my life than get on the mower. And I want to mow all the time. And you compare it to the guy over here who says, I don't want to mow. I don't need to mow. I want my pasture to be good for my cows. I want to have the most productivity I can. I want the grass to be healthy. I want the birds to be happy. I want to be really productive. If you compare those two, the grass that doesn't get mowed is always healthier. It's always stronger. It has deeper roots. It is more resistant to drought. It is more resistant to disease. It is more resistant to flooding than the pasture that gets mowed all the time. Wow. It makes perfect sense if you think about it. And it works for a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons it works, and we've been able to demonstrate this now, there's some research out there that begins to demonstrate that the grass that doesn't get mowed has roots that are much, much deeper than the grass that gets mowed all the time. The grass that gets mowed all the time has roots only a few inches deep, and that means a hard pan forms beneath it, and then it means it's resistant to even growing deeper because it's a whole cycle. And you want to know what's wrong with your grass? And I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. The problem with your grass is that you're probably mowing it too short, but you may also be mowing it too frequently. Oh, man, I didn't say that out loud, did I? Because you know what everybody says. They say you need to enjoy your life of mowing. You need to be out there every week or two mowing. And what I've discovered is that when I don't mow my yards for 2 or 3 weeks, the St. Augustine grass becomes incredibly healthy. Kind of an accident that I discovered. Really amazing. It really doesn't. It's tall, but it doesn't look bad. It doesn't flop over. And so mowing about every 3 weeks is probably a way to maximize the health of that St. Augustine lawn. And mowing it as tall as possible is a way of maximizing the health of that St. Augustine lawn because of the ability of those roots to dig deep into the ground. Deeper and deeper into the ground. And the deeper they dig, the better the soil drains. The deeper they dig, the more they're resistant to drought. The deeper they dig, the more minerals they can unlock. The more those roots are buffered from extremes of heat and cold. It's an amazing thing what happens. Kind of a new way of thinking about things. And one of the great changes, because, you know, we think of grass as golf course grass. That's our world now is golf course grass. But that's not the world as it used to be. So maybe we need to get over this idea, just if you don't mind, of recreational mowing. I thought the other day, I've said this before, somebody got on to me because I have a kind of a nice bike that I love to ride, and I use it a lot. And they said, yeah, I can't believe you spent that money on that bike. I said, I want a comfortable bike. I want a bike that gets me places. I want a bike that's nice. And those same people, you know what they do? They go buy a $6,000 lawnmower. If you've got $6,000, my friend, don't ask me what lawnmower to buy, because I'm going to tell you, please don't spend $6,000 on a lawnmower. That's the greatest waste of money, maybe on the planet. Let's think about what our grass really needs. Let's think about what our lawns really needs. Let's think about what our soil needs. You know, that's a good lesson. That's a good lesson for understanding what's going on with your shrubs. It's a good lesson for beginning to understand what's happening in your vegetable garden as well. And I'm beginning to rethink some of the things in the vegetable garden because I think we need to maximize that root depth and get that to be get roots as deep as possible. And that may require a little bit of extra effort. So we're thinking about all those things. Thinking about soil, thinking about how it affects your garden, thinking about how it affects your life, thinking about how it affects farming. And the success of farming, not something we've thought about very well over time, but it's one of the reasons why we're increasingly seeing a move towards no-till farming. And now we're going to, I think, go to that next stage, which is really beginning to understand soil depth and how important it is and how we have to work at it to create it. All these things I've been thinking about this week. We're going to think about your yard. We're going to think about what's happening there. We're going to think about how to help you. You give us a call. 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Carol in Bavinet always has some interesting questions. Excuse me. There we go. Carol in Bavinet always has some interesting questions. And today she's asking me important question that people should ask more often is it okay for me to put a nail in a tree? And I'll have a may have a surprising answer. From a tree's perspective, no, it doesn't really cause any harm at all. There it is. Most nails are not going to affect the vascular system of the tree in any way compared to most wounds we do to trees. In all the ways we do it, I mean, even comparing to pruning off small limbs, putting a nail in a tree is inconsequential. There it is. Doesn't hurt the tree at all. What it does is it causes problems for you. And this is something to think about. Because at some point, and frequently, the trees that we have in our yard are short-lived, and for a lot of reasons. In part because we live there next to them, and we do all sorts of damage to them, more than just the nails would do. And in part, because trees are a little bit short-lived here, the chances are good you're going to have to take that tree out one day. And if it's full of nails and metal and other pieces, yow! It can really hurt. It can really hurt the people who are trying to take the tree out. It can really hurt if you ever were to take the tree to the mill. You've basically made the wood useless then for anything except for mulch. And it can be very hard to work around because you don't know the nails are there. So the nails are a problem mostly because at some point you may have to cut that tree up. And you won't know the nails are there, and it can cause real damage, not only to the sawing equipment, but to the person using the saw. So it's always, that's why you often see people who are who do work on trees, you see them cringe when you put a nail in the tree, because they know, oh man, one of these days I'm going to hit that nail. And it's not pleasant when it happens. Probably doesn't hurt the tree, though, and that's the absolute truth. So, Carol, there it is. I kind of won both arguments. Your son's argument and your argument. It can cause problems if you ever have to take the tree out. So we were talking about soil today, and I was talking about the difference in pastures, and I also trying to bring it home to those of you who have lawns, and how we've become obsessed with mowing, and I've got to say, I love grass. I think grass is one of the coolest things in the world. I love having grass. I even love having short grasses like lawn grasses. I even like little pieces of lawn. I love places. I like to have a place where I can wrestle my brother, even though I'm getting way too old to wrestle my brother anymore. But it's good in theory, in case I ever get younger, that I would have a place to wrestle my brother, and so all of this is really nice, but lawns are nice, but they are not the world. Lawns should not be spread all over the whole world, and you shouldn't have to mow everything. We didn't used to do that. We didn't used to mow our roadsides, which is crazy. It's insane, man. I hope we got better things to do. I hesitate to say that part of the problem of our country is that all we have is that we've devoted so much time to mowing roadsides which is one of the great unnecessary things in the world. So no need to mow. Just get over it. I hope that you can get over it. But so the question is, what do you do about pastures? So listen, somebody said, I've got horses in my pastures and they don't eat everything. No, they don't. Horses are really selective. There's a reason horses are very selective about what they eat. They're really tooky, is the old Mississippi term for it that I grew up with. They're really peculiar about what they'll eat, and it's because they don't have, unlike cows, unlike ruminants, unlike cows and sheep and goats, they don't have this extra ruminating stomach that allows them to, if you'll allow me to say it, regurgitate food and redigest it. It's called chewing the cud is the thing, and it's why cows burp, and they burp all the time. And that burp has lots of methane, which has consequences. All of those things are happening with cows because cows have this extra stomach, this gigantic stomach that they regurgitate into. Horses don't have this. Sorry for all this description of those. For those of you who don't have horses, but horses don't have that. So they have to be much more careful about what they eat. And they eat softer grasses, they eat softer foods, and they often leave a lot unconsumed. One of the ways that we're beginning to understand how to deal with grazing is if you have a horse or a cow and you allow them 15 acres of pasture to run around in, eat wherever they want in that pasture, they're only going to eat, they're going to be so peculiar about what they eat. They're only going to eat the finest stuff, and you're only going to be left with the stuff like yellow ranunculus, like yellow buttercups and other things that nothing will eat. So one of the things we've learned about grazing is that you want to restrict grazing to certain areas of the pasture. If you don't do that, no matter how you mow, no matter what you do, you're going to lose the good grasses. So you want to divide your pasture. We can do it now with electric fences into smaller units. Have your horses graze there. Move them to the next unit, and leave the area where they're gonna really eat everything down a lot better. And leave that area to regenerate and to get better and to get healthier for about 30 to 45 days. That's about where we are. That's kind of the state of the knowledge. Let it get better. Sometimes 2 months, depending on what you got there. Let that get better, but they can eat the next place down and the next place down. This is what we're learning about how to graze, because it's the way animals have grazed in herds for a long time, and it's how they impact things. And they're not restricted, so they can move on. But if you've got a restricted area, you're going to have to make sure that you give areas time to recover. Let the horses and the cows eat it down really well, move them to the next area, and don't let them back on that area for a while. If you do that, your grasses are going to be incredibly healthy. Incredibly healthy. And that's what I'm saying about mowing lawns. We like to say that you shouldn't mow a lawn too close, and that's true. You don't want to repeatedly mow a lawn too close. It's a bad thing. It's a bad thing. You're out there mowing your lawn close every week, you're going to have stickers. You're going to have weeds. You're going to have a big problem. But if you mowed it close once every, and you left enough stubble, you'd want to leave some stubble, but if you mowed that lawn fairly close, say down to 3 or 4 inches, once every 3 months, it would probably do just fine. Because it has a chance to recover. It has a chance for those grass leaves to come up, photosynthesize, it has a chance for the roots to go down. So rotational grazing is the big thing that you need to do in pastures, and there it is. So one of the interesting things, so this person in Fair Oaks experimenting with their horses, and they quit mowing because I suggested they try that, and it was the favorite grass during this dry period. The horses loved that grass, and they loved it because the roots were deep, they were nutritious, they were full of moisture. The area that had been mowed was very susceptible to drought. A great experiment. So how do you do that over the long term? You got to think about it. You got to be careful with your management, and you got to do rotational grazing. And we can talk about how all that works. Probably wouldn't be of interest to everybody, but rotational grazing is a really important thing. Moving your horses to certain areas of the pasture, not letting them back until the other portion of the pasture recovers, is really critical. And it makes a big difference. It makes a big difference to birds. It makes a big difference to quail. You know, I like to say the reason, and I don't like to say it. That's ridiculous. I hate to say that the reason we don't have quail anymore is because we treat our pastures like golf courses. And we don't allow those grasses to develop. And we don't allow the right grasses to develop for the birds and for the quail, and quail and turkey and even deer. All of these creatures, big problems because of the way we manage our pastures as if it's a golf course. Hey, we're going to be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Me and my best friend Lillian and her blue tick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played, waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town, me and Lillian. Just across the line in a little southeast of Meridian. She loved her brother, I remember back when. He was fixing up a 49 and in. He told her little sister, gonna ride the wind up around the moon and back again. He never got farther than Vietnam. I was standing there with her when the telegram come, a Lily. Now he's lying somewhere about a million miles from Meridian.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain, rain on my face.
All right, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. It's always fun to get pictures of pretty plants, pretty wild plants. And Rusty in Moss Point sends me a picture of a plant that I like very much. The scientists like to call it Costeletskia, but we're going to call it salt marshmallow. Does that work? It's a kind of hibiscus. Remember the hibiscus family? You can see how it looks like a hibiscus, right? Really beautiful plant of the swamps and the brackish marshes mostly, and sometimes salt marshes. Down around Moss Point, Rusty ought to be running into it a lot. It's kind of a wetland. Beautiful in gardens. It does really well in gardens. Save some seeds from that, Rusty. Take it back to your garden and sow them. And they do very well, even if the ground isn't extremely wet. They're doing very, very well. Let's see. We got a bunch of callers this morning. I'm listening. Kathy, what's going on with your tomatoes?
Well, I don't know. This morning I got up and looked at the bank. I only have one plant, so I've got big plants. But it looks like somebody has put pepper all over the leaves. It looks like somebody had put pepper all over the leaves.
Yeah, and so help me a little bit more. Describe that to me.
Well, it's just little black. It's like I said, it looks like somebody sprinkled pepper on the leaves.
So just big dots on top of the leaves. So I'm wondering if it's – Kathy, have you got your radio on?
No, I don't. One second. Huh. Okay, is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
So the – what I'm thinking is it's frass. And is your tomato under a tree?
No, it's sitting out in the barn.
It's sitting out in the middle of things. And do you see any holes in the leaves anywhere?
I didn't get that last part of what you said.
Do you see any holes in the leaves anywhere?
No. No, it's in a pot. It's just in a pot.
It's in a container. And well, you know, Kathy, here's what you're going to have to do. You have to send me a picture of this. Because
okay.
I may not be thinking about it right. And if it's just, and these are just, have you picked up any of these little black pieces? Are they like little black grains?
No, they're not grains. It's like, it looks, it's on the leaf. It's growing, you know, you can't get it off. You can't
it's
brush
a fungus
it off,
growing on the leaves. Yeah. And it's on your tomatoes. Well.
Just the leaf.
Yeah, it doesn't sound familiar. So I'm going to ask you to send it. Can you take a picture of that and text it to me?
I can do that. I won't be able to do that it right now because I'm in the car, but I will do it.
Yeah.
And maybe you can talk about it next week.
That's right. And if you'll send it to me, if you'll take a picture and send it to me next week and let me look at it and make sure I understand what this thing looks like, and
okay.
I can give you a better answer. It's not something I've seen on a tomato before. I've seen it on other plants. I can imagine what it would be on other plants. I'm not seeing what it would be on a tomato. Send me a picture of this and let me think about it and let's work on it next week. So
okay.
Send me that picture to this number. Just the number you're calling in, just text it in and let me look at it and we'll try to figure out what it is.
All right, that sounds great.
Thank you, Kathy. Bye. So, Randy, I think I can answer your question. Tell me about your tomato.
Okay.
And you say it's got a black bottom.
Yes, it has a little background. We lived here a few years back, moved to Florida, and then went over to, came back here to the Summerdale area. And every time that we have planted regular style type tomatoes, we get a black bottom rot. Now, we have raised cherry tomatoes without any problems. But
yeah.
Someone told me that big tomatoes just won't grow down here without black bottom rot, and that just doesn't sound right to me. So I'm just looking for some help.
Yeah, well, people will tell you anything. Let's talk about what you got. And first off, I want to know, are you growing these in containers? Are you growing them in really high raised beds? Are you doing either one of those two things?
Both. And Daphne, we raise them in a raised bed. And then over in Florida, we raise them in a raised bed and also containers. And then over here in Summerdale, what we've done, we've got one of my plants, I've got them in a container, like an upside down tomato. I was going to try that this year. And then we have purchased a 9-foot, what I call a feed trough, and fill that with good soil.
So how did I know to ask that question? I know to ask that question because I could tell you that the reason you're suffering so much problem from it is because of how you're growing your tomatoes and where you're growing them.
Okay.
Tomatoes grown in containers, whether we're talking about a feed trough or heaven forbid, upside down, there's no benefit to growing. I mean, there's zero benefit to growing a tomato upside down.
And it creates
lots of problems.
That's just an experiment. I've never done it.
So now you know. Now you know. So that experiment, just put that one aside. Let's experiment in some other ways. So the troughs and the containers always lead, in a huge percentage of cases, they lead to something called blossom end rot. So let me tell you what you got. Blossom end rot is basically resulting from the inability of the tomato plant to be able to carry nutrients from one part of the plant to another. And this is always worsened by containers. And it's worsened by containers for two reasons. One, container soils tend to have less calcium and less nutrient availability, often have less nutrient availability and less calcium than other soils. So you may have to add a little bit extra calcium to the containers in order to have enough. But more importantly, and this is even more important, containers have huge fluctuations in wetness and dryness. And when there is any fluctuation in wetness and dryness, it makes it very difficult for the tomato plant to regulate the transfer of nutrients from one part of the plant to another. And okay. As a result...
Now we water every day.
As a result...
Make sure we keep it wet.
Yeah. But it still makes it... In fact... Containers are hard to regulate moisture for a lot of reasons, and it can be that they're too wet and too dry, but it inevitably happens in containers. So one of the things, because I don't like growing, a lot of people are successful growing tomatoes in containers. If they are, they have a really good soil mix, a great soil mix, they have a really well-drained container. Being able to drain is as important as being able to hold moisture. And okay. Because if you hold too much moisture, if you're holding too much moisture at the surface or down below, wherever, it's going to inhibit the transfer of water. I know that sounds crazy, but plants can't make use of the water if it's too wet. So the water needs to be able to drain through. So a couple of remedies. So here's practically speaking, a couple of remedies. Grow your tomatoes in the ground in lots of organic matter. That always works. And you'll almost never have a problem with blossom end rot if your soil, regular soil, at about a normal soil height, maybe 2 or 3 inches above the regular ground, you'll never have a problem with blossom end rot in those conditions with plenty of organic matter. Very simple. The other remedy is if you're going to grow in a container, make sure you have plenty of space in the container and plenty of depth. Make sure that container drains really well and make sure you have a really good, well-draining potting soil mix. So, okay. And it can be hard to find. If I were going to grow tomatoes, the potting soil mix I would use is very similar to the potting soil mix that is sold at Shore Acres Nursery in Mobile. It's a beautiful mix. It's perfect for growing tomatoes. It'll last all season. It won't compact. It allows moisture to move through pretty easily, so that it doesn't collect and stagnate. But it also holds on to moisture reasonably well. So a good potting soil mix helps. And the other thing I would do is make sure that you might have to add a little bit of extra calcium to your potting mixes to overcome the fact that it's a potting mix. So and you shouldn't have blossom end rot, and calcium is just in the form of regular dolomitic lime. Add a little bit extra dolomitic lime, powdered lime, to your potting mixes when you lay them out, and you should be able to grow them even in a under those conditions. You should be able to grow them in containers without these problems. A lot of people, big tomatoes are harder here, but not because of blossom end rot. And you should be able to grow them without blossom end rot. And I have to take a break. I can hear it coming. If you want to hold on for just a second, Randy, we'll come back.
So I will yeah.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
I'm only happy when it's Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, I had a caller earlier about tomatoes with black pepper on the leaves, and somehow I got the wrong image of black pepper in my head, and I wasn't thinking. I'm wondering if these are spots, if they're rings on the leaves that are blackened on the edges. I think we may have septoria leaf spot, which is a fungal disease. It will often affect the lower parts of the leaves first, and it can cause defoliation. Listen, let me tell you what to do about that, and you call me back. But we need to mulch under those plants because something is causing that fungus to splash upward on the plant. And we want to contain that as much as possible. And we need to talk about how you're watering, because all of these things can affect it. It should be just on the bottom of the plant. If it's just on the bottom of the plant, I got it figured out. So give me a call back, and maybe we can work on that. Meanwhile, Randy and I have been talking about black-bottom tomatoes. That is tomatoes that have blossom end rot. It's a rot that develops on the bottom of those tomatoes. And I was giving him some prescriptions for avoiding that. Randy, did I help at all?
Yes, you did. One question is, you recommended a lime or a compost from Shore Acres Nursery. Can you recommend anything? I live on the Eastern Shore.
Yeah. So here's the thing. You'll get the best potting mix you possibly can. I wanted to give you an example of one that I trust. What you really want is a potting mix that has as much pine bark in it as possible. It's that simple. And so you want a lot of pine bark in the mix, 75% if possible. Each piece is smaller than your fingernail. That pine bark makes a lot of difference in how those potting mixes operate. It's one of the best ingredients for artificial soils, which is what you have to use in a container that I can come up with. It's what nursery growers use, and they use it because it works. So you want about 75% pine bark in your mix. You don't want a bunch of peat moss. If you're getting a mix that has a bunch of peat moss in it, like Pro Mix or something else, it can cause huge problems in this climate. So make sure it's got plenty of pine bark. And one of the things I know, it's very hard to predict what Home Depot and Lowe's and all those kind of crazy folks have, because they don't really tell you that well. But what I do know is that the mix that I get from Shore Acres is a prime mix. But you can try, get the best mix you can, real high percentage of pine bark.
Sure.
The lime is just plain old dolomitic lime. Don't get anything fancy. Don't get any fast acting lime. Don't get it pelletized. Really, just get plain old powdered dolomitic lime. And if you've got a 5-gallon bucket, mix a handful in there, about what you could put in your hand, and just mix it in there real good, a heaping handful. Mix it in there real good. You'll have plenty of lime and plenty of available lime for calcium for your plants. So all that's going to help. And then regulating the water as carefully as possible, which is hard to do in containers during – it's always hard to do in containers, but that's one thing to do. One thing to think about. Yep.
Okay, that sounds great, and I really appreciate your program, and thank you for some guidance, and I'll see what I can work out.
All right, Randy, good to hear from you. Hey, Thomas, you there? Thanks for holding on.
Hey, good morning. Happy plants to you.
Yeah,
I was,
you too.
Really interested in your rotation. I'm writing a diet book, and I'm going to name it Rotation Grazing. And you're not laughing, are you? That's not my intention today. Although I was playing with my bells. I always play with my bells. Hey, that's really interesting, because I remember crop rotation, but I never saw a grazing rotation until I met, they were kind of the big people. That's all you can say. They were excess eaters, you could say. And so I thought I'd write a book. And where did you get my book, Bill?
Well, I haven't got it yet. But
you haven't got it? You should. It's very interesting. And what about the crop rotation? I'm on corn one time. I'm big on legumes and nuts. That's what I really like, legumes and nuts. It's real good for your diet, don't you?
Yeah, they are good. And I like eating beans. I love eating peas.
Yep.
And they're both good, and of all kinds, and they're the one thing I say about beans and peas. If you were only going to grow one thing in your garden, the most productive thing that I think everybody should concentrate on are beans. I mean, they're so versatile. You can use the long green beans that they. If you were really worried about having something to eat. Beans. Beans and peas.
I remember as a kid going hunting, rabbit hunting or squirrel hunting or something and going across the fields in a garden, sneaking at somebody's garden, and you just snap those fresh beans off the vine, and they're excellent like that.
That's right. They're absolutely delicious.
I used to pilfer some peaches off the street every year, too, and that was good.
Yeah, that's good, that's good.
Well, I'm enjoying your show. I want to touch bases with you. I haven't talked to you in a long time. And have a good holiday and a safe holiday to all right. Your listeners.
Thomas, good to hear from you. Thank you. Amy, I'm listening. What's up?
Hi, Bill. I had a question. I wanted to take you up on something you had mentioned, I think, last week about using the bare areas in your that would normally be in your grass area for some other purpose. So I was thinking about using it for planting flowers, and my neighbor had also mentioned that she was interested in trying to grow cantaloupe. I don't know if it's possible or not, but I was wondering if we could share that area, but I specifically wanted to about plants, flowers that I could use for that. I'm not sure if I'm going to keep it, so I don't know if I want annuals or perennials. But the area itself is in the southeast part of the yard, and it gets full sun by noon.
Yeah. So here we go. Let's do this quick before I run out of time. Yeah, absolutely. And I highly recommend that you start out with annuals first and decide whether you like it. Charlie's telling me I got 30 seconds before this hard break, and there's so much that I could tell you about.
Okay, can I hang on?
Will you please hang on?
Okay,
and let's come back after the news, and let's talk about how you can use that space, because there's a lot of ways to use it, and it could be a really fun thing.
All right, thank you so much.
All right. Oh, so we got to take a break here. There it is. I knew it was coming up. Hey, we'll be back. Give us a call. Black tarantula. We like come and we want to live 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch. We like come and we want to 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.